I do this for my culture, 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 culture. Welcome to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me. Happy Thursday, folks. Happy Thursday. Wow, man, oh, man. Look, we got a fantastic show for you tonight. Fantastic show. Tonight, we're going to be talking to the Baltimore City Public School System's board chair and vice chair. Yes, folks, this is going to be a good conversation. We're going to be joined in a few moments with Ms. Linda Shania, who serves as the chair for the school board here in Baltimore City, and Ms. Johnette Richardson, who is the vice chair. We wanted to have a conversation with these two ladies. One, because some of you may not know who they are. And then I think, two, the most important part of this is understanding the role and the roles and the responsibilities of the Baltimore City Public School System. Since there are a lot of conversations about, you know, what's happening with the school system, how are these decisions being made, how are resources being allocated, where's the money going, the whole nine. Well, what is the best way for us to have these conversations other than talking to the decision makers themselves? And in a few moments, we'll also open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to pose your questions to Ms. Linda, Ms. Johnette. And then hopefully we can get into a better understanding about how the school system works and all of that good stuff. So that will be checking in for the first hour. At the 6 o'clock mark, we're going to have a little special conversation. I'm really excited about this one. It's my very special guest, Ms. Tonisa Welch, who is the first lady of the Black Mafia family. Yeah. She's going to talk to us about her story, her passion, and how life is now, many, many years after the Black Mafia family organization was taken down, and she's going to give us some insight about what she's been doing. And I mean, it's just a lot. She has a very compelling and very powerful story. So we are very excited to have her join us in a little bit. But folks, let's jump right in because I don't want to waste these ladies' time. And I'm very, very happy that they are able to join us. So let's welcome to the airwaves of WEAA 88.9 and For the Culture, the board chair of the Baltimore City Public School System, Ms. Linda Chenier, and the vice chair, Ms. Johnette Richardson. Ms. Linda, Ms. Johnette, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, Raji.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's start with the basics because, you know, we invited you on because there has been so much conversation. Of course, you ladies know this. You know there's been a lot of conversation about education in our city. But what I find, Ms. Linda, and I'm going to talk to you first, what I find to be the interesting part about it is, you know, not that people are just upset or they might be feeling a certain type of way about what's going on with the school system, But what I find is that we're not getting enough information about how decisions are made. That's always important to me. Like, yes, it's one thing to get upset and about certain decisions, but what are the determining factors behind the decisions? Like, how did certain things come to happen? So that's, you know, that's what I feel like is the big part that's missing from the larger conversation. So Ms. Linda, talk to us first about, you know, this idea of the board chair. What is the role of the board of the Baltimore City Public Schools?
Well, thank you. Well, the role of the school board is to really set the vision and strategic goals for the system, and then within that specifically, we do the hiring and the evaluation for the CEO, which other systems call superintendent. We adopt and advocate for a legislative platform during the General Assembly in Annapolis. We approve the budget. We adopt the policies which the system really operates under. We approve the curriculum. And we also approve contracts with the various unions of folks that work for the system. And we approve certain appointments for people that have particular certifications. And then we are also responsible for really the oversight and holding the vision accountable for all of the goals that we have set. So that, in a nutshell, are the important responsibilities of the board.
Ms. Linda, can I say that's a big nutshell?
Yes.
That's a huge nutshell.
Yes, it's a big nut to crack.
That is a huge nut to crack, and that's a lot of work. That is a lot of work. That is a lot of work. And I'm so happy that you were able to kind of run down. I want to make sure that my notes are correct on this, because I was like, wait a minute, hold on. She about to break it down to us. But let me make sure I have this. The hiring process, advocating for, I guess, for better educational policies, especially down in the state capital.
Yes.
Of course, you're dealing with the budget issue. We'll certainly talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Approving curriculum. That you're talking about curriculum from K through 12 and all in you know, everything that's in between of that process.
Actually, for us, pre-K through 12.
Okay.
Yes.
Pre-K through 12. Approving contracts.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody.
Yes.
And having those negotiations with the unions about those contracts. So you're assuming you dictate. You have the board has a huge part of the is a part of the huge part of the conversation around teacher pay, all of that good stuff.
Yes.
All right. Appointments. You mentioned any type of appointments, certain appointments that need to be made. Are those appointments within the system, such as principal appointments, teacher? You know, what does that mean and what does that entail?
Yes, I would be the teachers, principals, and then when you hear, generally you will hear of the central office staff, those folks that are in some of the supervisory roles.
Mm-hmm.
So we would approve those. Those are people that have the people with certificates to work in those areas.
And just very quickly, Ms. Linda, there is a vetting process.
Yes, there
for
is.
Each appointment, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that process includes the school community itself.
Mm-hmm.
It might include the supervisor that works with the school, coordinator, the school staff. Then there is a review, through human capital in terms of being certain that the folks who've been presented as possible candidates meet all the qualifications. Our recommendation then comes from all of that vetting to the CEO, who makes a final recommendation.
Okay. So y'all do a lot of the legwork, and then the CEO, Dr. Santalisa, she makes the final decision. The final decision.
She makes a recommendation.
The final recommendation
to the board. The board then votes on that recommendation.
Oh, okay. Final record. So you do the legwork. Say, here, Dr. Oh. S., this is where we are right now. This is the folks that we're looking at. She looks through it and say, okay, here's the people I like, puts it back into the board's hands.
The legwork for Raji is done by the staff. Like, we have an Office of Human Capital.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're putting in that groundwork, finding the candidates, vetting candidates. And so the staff will do that, and they present up to Dr. Santelices, who, you know, they out of that process, who they would want. And then she then makes the final decision as to what then comes up to the board.
All right. Fantastic. I appreciate that clarification. I just want to make sure that our listeners understand and hear it correctly. And then the final piece, Ms. Linda, you talked about was oversight.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean exactly?
We are responsible for making certain, I guess the main one would be our fiduciary responsibility around the spending of the money correctly.
Okay.
We approve the budget, and then we monitor that budget on a regular basis. And we do a lot of that monitoring and accountability piece through our committee. So, for example, we have an operations committee that really takes a close look, first close look at the requests for the purchases and things. They then come to the full board, but we get regular reports as to what monies we have, how that's being spent. We do the same thing around curriculum,
mm-hmm.
and student achievement and what's happening with teaching and learning, and, you know, what do the data tell us about how well students are achieving and what types of changes may be necessary. So in that way, that's what I mean when I say accountability. And we must send an actual written report to the Maryland State Department of Education every year.
Okay. Okay, and there are 9 people on the board.
10, if you include our student commissioner.
Oh, 10 people on the board. Okay, mm-hmm. All right, awesome. Okay, okay, great. So that's, and I'm again, this is like we're starting from square one, because I and Ms. Linda, you tell me if I'm wrong. Do you feel like people know what you do for the Baltimore City Public School System? When we have these big conversations, do you feel like people know what the board is, what the Baltimore City Public School System board does?
I believe that the majority of people probably don't understand it in full detail. There are a few folks, I think, that do understand, and we see and hear from those folks, but I think most people, until something impacts their particular school or an issue that they're really concerned with, I'm not certain that they understand all of the work that the board does.
Right, right. Okay. So I'm making sure that, because I feel the same way. I feel the same way. Now, Johnette, I want to bring you into this part of the conversation. What is the board's relationship to the CEO?
So we have a good relationship with the current CEO.
Uh-huh.
We meet with her every week, Linda and I. We have weekly meetings with her. We hear about projects that she's working on. We hear about big picture items that she's working on. We also, of course, with our public board meetings and things of that nature, the full board has opportunities to meet with her. I want to just say that Dr. Santelices has been an amazing CEO for this system. She all the time will pick up the phone, call commissioners. It's not just me and Linda that she has relationships with.
Mm-hmm.
She will call commissioners, check in. She will ask questions. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And so it's been a really good relationship, because we all have the same goal in mind. We want to do what's best for young people. We want to do what's best for our families. And so when you start from that place,
yeah,
then it just becomes like, how do we do that? And we're always working with her to figure that out.
So does she report directly to the board?
Or yes,
how
she
does. Is the board, quote unquote, her supervisor?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
We hire the CEO, we evaluate the CEO,
mm-hmm.
And, yeah, she reports directly to us. I want to also say, Faraji, you mentioned earlier about the big lift that Linda articulated earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I want to also add that we are all volunteers too, and
I was going to bring that point up because I know that you've done work with like the Office of Neighborhoods and mm-hmm. many other places around. So this is all volunteer work. You don't get paid to do this.
No, we don't.
No, I do not. No, sir.
Miss Linda, you laughing like I wish. But you don't get paid to do this. But this is all volunteer work. But this is something that you kind of worked yourself up to. I mean, you nobody volunteers for something that they don't want to do.
Correct.
Yes.
So I've spent a large majority of my career in community development.
Right.
I grew up in Camden, New Jersey, so I was a part of the public school system there. So I have a love for public school system. I understand through my career the interplay between community and schools and how schools can change the entire dynamic of a neighborhood. And so for me, it's that passion about wanting to see Baltimore thrive, wanting to be a part of creating this change for the city,
mm-hmm.
and connecting that with my love for education and my love for public education, and just wanting to do some good in the world, right? I live my life by the scripture that says, to whom much is given, much is required. I've been blessed with, you know, a good head on my shoulders. I've had great experiences, and I want to be able to give that back.
So how, and I appreciate that, Johnette, for you, mm-hmm. you know, saying that, because I think that is exactly what we need in Baltimore City. You know it. I know it. Miss Linda, you knows it. So
right.
I think that's exactly what we need. Johnette, how long have you been on the board?
I have been on the board. I finished my first term. I'm in the first year of my second term, so 4 years now.
4 years. And Miss Linda, how about yourself, ma'am?
I finished up a term that was left, and I'm ending my second full term. So I believe that comes out to about 7 years, and
seven
I will
years.
Be exiting the board in June.
Oh, you're exiting this June, like
yes.
next month, like in 2
right.
months.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My term is up at that time. Right. And, yeah. And I would like to say that, you know, similar to Johnette, I'm actually a product of Baltimore City.
Okay.
From first grade through 12th grade. And then came back and taught in Baltimore City and worked as a administrator and supervisor in the system. I was in the system for a total of about 38 years.
How many?
38.
That's what I thought you said. That's why I had to do a double take, Ms. Linda. 38
right.
years as
yes.
an educator?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I went left and did some things with my church affiliation in the office of my bishop, and then came back with the school board. And similar to, I think, what most board members will tell you, it's just the love of the city, and for me, the love of the children. I also have grandchildren who are now in city schools, and I feel like this is what I'm was supposed to be doing, and so that's why I've done it for the past 7-plus years.
Are you, once your term ends in June, are you seeking to renew that term?
The appointed terms have a finite end.
Okay.
I am will obviously be available in any way that I can be of help.
Okay.
Both to, you know, to individual schools where, my grandchildren attend, and if the system feels like, you know, there's something I could do to help in an advisory role or as a continuing as a volunteer in some other way, I will certainly be there.
Johnette, you brought up a point about you working with community development in neighborhoods. Some folks would
yes.
say that the school board deserves or should have nothing but either educators, you know, present educators or former educators. You know, what's your response to that? Because you're not an educator, but you work in human development still.
Yes, correct. So I would say that when the board works best, there is a cross-functioning of people from various backgrounds, because perspective matters. And so if we're all educators, then the perspective would only ever be from a place of K through 12 education. Mm-hmm. But it's important to have people who run businesses, right? Because they tend to have more of that management and finance background. It's important to have parents on our board, people who have said, this is a system that I believe in and I'm going to send my own child to participate in this. So we need that voice around the table. We, you know, parents with children with special needs, right? We need someone who can bring perspective mm-hmm. to our board, which is why in the current setup of our board, there are these various positions that is supposed to be representative of our board, and it's for that very reason, for that cross-thinking, thought partnering, and being able to have a wide range of perspective as we approach whatever decision-making that we need to have.
I can understand. Now I understand that view. I definitely understand the view. It's about perspective. It's about, you know, having more than one set of, one type of eyes. You want to have many different types of eyes on
that
a situation, right?
Absolutely.
That is correct.
I get you. Folks, if you've just been tuning in, we are talking to the vice chair and the chair of Baltimore City Public School System. We're talking to the chair, Ms. Linda Chenea, and then the vice chair, Ms. Johnette Richardson. Talking about just the basics, understanding what your Baltimore City Public School System board is all about, what their roles are, what their responsibilities are, you know, what is their relationship to the CEO of schools, and essentially, how are decisions made? We want you to join us, 410-319-8888. You can join us right now at 410-319-8888. Ladies, when we come back, we got to take a quick pause. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about some of the big decisions that have to be made, and how did you two and the board and the CEO get to certain decisions? Because I feel like that's where people don't understand. They don't see, and I don't think they don't understand because they're stupid. I just think they don't understand because they don't understand all of the determining factors. And, you know, I would love to get your take on some of these big determining factors. I mean, we want to talk about budget. We want to talk about school closings. We want to talk about ghost students. Let's talk about it so that way we can get into a better space with our Baltimore City Public School System. So, folks, we're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, more conversation with the chair and vice chair of Baltimore City Public School Board. And, of course, we want you to join us, 410-319-8888. Also, post your comments or questions on my Facebook page at Faraji Muhammad. And stay rocking and rolling and stay rotting with us. There's a whole lot to get to in the second 30 of For the Culture here on WEAA.
I do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening. Folks, we are talking to the Baltimore City Public School Chair, the Board Chair, and the Board Vice Chair. We're talking to Ms. Linda Chenea, who serves as the Board Chair, and Ms. Johnette Richardson, who serves as the Vice Chair. And we're talking to them about the business of the Baltimore City Public School Board. This is the decision. This is the board of decision makers that make those big decisions, along with Dr. Sonia Santelises, the CEO of schools. The purpose of tonight's conversation, so we know exactly how those decisions are made, who is making the decisions, and most importantly, how do we get to a place where we understand the roles, the responsibilities, and how we get to a place where we can finally work together to bring something to the table and that everybody is on the same page when it comes to the education of our children. Let's check back in with the conversation. And folks, you can join me right now at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Before we go to the calls, Ms. Linda, I want to get your thoughts on this because the CEO, she just proposed her budget for the new year, the fiscal year for Baltimore City Public Schools starts July 1st, based on my understanding. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. 1.18 billion dollars for the general fund budget. This is only, according to the reports, this is only a $10 million increase for in-person instruction for next year. Is that correct?
I will have to check the exact figure.
Okay.
In terms of what you're saying for the increase, my understanding, we've just had a presentation this past Tuesday.
Yes, ma'am.
On the budget, and the full budget for the system's priorities were $1.39 billion.
$1.39 billion. Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Hey, more money is always good. So you know,
mm-hmm.
That's fine. But the question that I have for this is that there has always been conversation about money, mm-hmm. money with the school board and the school system in general. Mm-hmm. Most of the money comes from the state, and if I'm mistaken, please correct me. But based upon what I understand, most of the money is coming from the state. Some money is coming from the city.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been so much talk that if we put more money into the school system, that we're going to get a better return on the investment. What's your take on that conversation as the board chair?
I believe that we always can use funding. And one big reason, as you look around the city and a part of our budget, you know, we talk about the budget for constructing new buildings. We have the oldest building stock in the state. So in terms of just having a structure that students can be in that is comfortable and has the right types of resources for them is an important piece, and that takes money. I think also in terms of return on investment, as we look at the individual needs of each student, the costs for those needs vary. And so that's what makes the statement about needing more money important for me. For example, Baltimore City has, again, the largest population of students in poverty. And we do need additional funds to really be able to do what those students need. And it includes many more services than just saying we're going to have a teacher in a classroom mm-hmm. for them. We also have a large number of students who have special needs, and that's additional money for the kinds of things that they may need for an individualized educational plan. We also have a large and growing population of students where English is not their first language, and that's additional resources. And so I will say as a thank you and a positive piece, the legislation that passed this year, which we call the Curbin legislation, mm-hmm. takes all of that into account and is adding dollars and adding monies for us to be able to address those and actually putting more resources for those specific kinds of needs that students have. But I also know that at times people will look at data and feel like it's not moving as fast as they would like it.
Right.
And I, you know, being realistic about that, even with those additional dollars, and I've only named a few because I could add even more in terms of, you know, tutoring and after school and all those other things that our children need,
mm-hmm.
You may not see the results in a month or 2 months. Those are things that you need to be consistent with
mm-hmm.
in terms of seeing longer range results. So that's where I was, you know, my feeling on that one.
Yes, ma'am.
I think a part of the problem we've had in the city is for many, many years being consistently underfunded.
Right, which is why we're raising the question because, I mean, as far as I can remember, that Dr. Santelice at least has served as a CEO, and I'm even before her predecessor. The budget has always been around 1.1, maybe $1.2 billion, and it really hasn't. And I'm wondering to myself, if we're talking about improving some things, the budget should go up. right? Mm-hmm. There should be more money. And it seems to be this, I mean, it seems like the budget cost has really been around the same cost pretty much every year. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, you know, what is the biggest challenge for there to be more money to be placed into the system? And then, you know, looking at that new money and say, okay, here are the priorities. Mm-hmm. Is the priorities just building new buildings, or is the priority really addressing student needs and building great students?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've laid out the list of priorities, I think, very specifically. In fact, Dr. Santelices and staff and the system put out a document that we shared at least 2 years ago at this point that indicates how we would use, if we had adequate funding, how we would use that funding. So it's a whole range of all the things that I've said and plus.
Right.
The issue that we always and we hear our CEO say about budgeting is budgeting really indicates where folks put their priorities.
Right.
And to the extent that we say education is important but then don't fund it, then we are not really true to our word.
But it's become, as you know, this has become like a political football. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, the state is not doing enough, so therefore we can't do enough. Then the state said, oh, well, the school system is not being accountable. The school system is not showing that they know how to use the money wisely. And then the old saying,
right,
that if two elephants are fighting, you know, the grass is the one that's really getting the beating.
Right.
And in this case, the grass is the students.
Right. And I do need to say that we are audited on a regular basis.
Okay.
And if anyone has been listening and reading any of the minutes from the school board, we have external audits from federal, state. Our audits have all been clean and top-notch. So we are using the money appropriately. And I don't know that folks, you know, hear that message.
Yeah.
But, I do want them to know that. And in addition to that, we audit ourselves internally. So we are constantly, in that piece when you asked me earlier about accountability, we are constantly looking to see that, you know, where we have indicated priorities and where we put the money, that it is being used in the right way.
And all of those audits are, they're up for public, you know, for public review.
The external audits are actually presented at public board meetings, and yes, they're reviewed. The internal audits, I think the summaries are available,
mm-hmm.
but remember, we're also using that in terms of things that we may need to then look into more deeply.
Right.
And so, depending on you know where it is,
okay,
we have to we really use that as our way of correcting, self-correcting.
All right, let's go to the phone lines and hear what folks got to say as we're talking to the Baltimore City Public School Board Chair and Vice Chair. We're talking to Ms. Linda and Johnette from Baltimore City Public Schools. Let me go to Ms. Rita. Ms. Rita, thank you so much for checking in. What's your question?
Hi. Good evening, everybody. Can y'all hear me good?
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. Good evening. And thank you again, once again, Taraji, for such an excellent show.
Thank you.
I thank you so much, ladies, for informing us and doing this all for not only for free, but just because you want to. And I thank you for that. And with that in mind, I'm going to make certain that my statement is with the utmost respect. I raised my children in Frederick County, and the system there is very different. But by the time my children were teens, we relocated and returned back to Baltimore. My very first experience was when I took both of my kids into the high school. I don't want to say the high school's name. And there was an administrator. And it was hot. It was very hot. And I remember vividly when I went into the administrative room, it was so cool. It was wonderful. And it dawned on me, well, so the grown folks got this air conditioner, but the babies got to sit in heat. So I asked her a question. I asked this administrator, so the children don't have air conditioner in that room? Now, I would have respected and would have gladly taken her response. But just to let you know, first and foremost, her disposition mm-hmm. and her demeanor instantly changed. And you would have thought that I asked her the most insulting question. And she looked at me with the sharpest of eyes and said, "The administrative office has the air conditioning for the adults." She had no response in regards to the children. Mm-hmm. And it blew my mind. Wow, I just left a county where Europeans, they highly regard their babies. And they want to make sure their babies are comfortable in a setting indicative of them becoming excellent in their education. It's amazing. I'm in a city that majority of my people, and this is what my people are doing. It blew my mind, but I let it go. Fast forward. I know you recall when the heaters all went out. This is mm-hmm. a little bit later. And there was no heat in school. And both of my children were complaining to me that they had sent a class with extra coats to stay warm because there was no heat in the class. Mind you, this is a high-ranking one of the top schools in Baltimore City, and that blew my mind again. I remember vividly looking at the Fox News, and there was Dr. Centelise, and I remember a lot of angry parents were responding and asking her, "What in the world are y'all doing? Do you really, really care? What is the problem?" I'll never forget her response began with, "I am not saying what they were saying, but what I am saying is the next time." And when I heard that, I shut her off. Because it dawned on me, there shouldn't be a next time. And for you to give that answer, I'm concerned if the administration of this city, which happens to be people of color, are they actually functioning with an ethos of apathy? Do they really have the compassion to care for their own people? Or are they just talking that to acquire stature? And then after that, it's a done deal. You on your own. You got this.
Ms. Rita, I'm going to stop you right there just because I want to allow Ms. Linda and Jeanette to respond to that. But I appreciate your passion, and I understand your sentiment. Ms. Linda or Jeanette?
Ms. Rita, first of all, I would have to say I am so sorry that you would have encountered an administrator with the kind of answer that you got. That we are, as a system, area of focus is really looking at preparation for folks and review of folks who are in positions as especially our school administrators, because that's the first contact that the community has is generally with that school and with the school principal. Given that, I would say the leadership that I know and as I have worked with the members of the board and with other leaders that look like me who are African-American, black folks, like most of our city, there is a real desire to do right for our children. And although it may be frustrating at times that it doesn't happen as quickly as we would like, and I think I mentioned earlier about the age of some of our buildings. I do recall the meeting with the issue around the heat, and we actually met with the community. The board actually met with the community along with the CEO and to hear all that folks had. There were major changes that occurred as a result of that in terms of upgrades in some of our buildings and continuous upgrades that are taking place. Mm-hmm. The emphasis around, in fact, our new proposal in terms of construction is looking at some of those high schools, and especially the historical high schools that just cannot be in poor shape for our children, as well as even some changes in staff, I will say, where it was appropriate when people, when you weren't getting the type of results and empathy and responses that were required.
All right.
I want to tap on to that and just say that, first of all, that's unacceptable, right, to have any parent who is entering in any of our schools to have to encounter that sort of energy from our school administrator. So, like Linda, I'm so sorry that this parent had to endure that, and I'm so happy that she called tonight. Ms. Rita, I'm happy that you called tonight because it helps to color in some of the work that still needs to be done. So I don't know how long that happened, but I will say that in our Office of Human Capital, there is a program that has emerged called Lead From Your Seat, and there are a ton of training that is now going on with our frontline staff, like our secretaries and the people who are the first face to our families when they walk into our schools. And so that sort of programming, to Linda's point, things don't change overnight, but just bear with us because we have identified these kinds of things and we're trying our best to put together the infrastructure needed so that folks can be trained and customer service can be elevated at the school level and all over the system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go back to the line. Let me hear from Mr. Leo. Mr. Leo, checking in. What's your take, sir?
Brother Faraji Muhammad, thank you for this program. And ladies from the Board of School Commissioners, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
I just want to know, with regard to the family and community engagement policy, mm-hmm. There is a family and community engagement policy for the Baltimore City Public Schools. I know that you know about it, but when I talk to parents in predominantly black schools, they're telling me they never heard of that. I guess my question is, is it mandated? How do you provide parent orientation for the family and community engagement policy which you administer? How do you ensure that parents know what it is and how to utilize it to evaluate the performance of themselves and their children, more importantly, in our schools? Reading, math, writing proficiency standards seem to have been lowered as compared, when we talk about social promotion, it seems as though we're not doing the things we were doing when I came through the system here. It seemed to be somewhat better in the 50s and 60s than it is now in terms of discipline and cursive writing, which you still need cursive writing. Even in a time of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, you need to know how to write your name. And if you don't have pride in writing your name, you don't know how to write your name. It seems to me that that's a deficiency that should not occur. But talk to me about the policy, family and community engagement policy, and parent orientation.
Mr. Leo, it's always good to hear from you. Thank you so much for that question.
Okay, well, so there you put a lot in there. in terms of the family and community engagement policy, yes, it does exist.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, the way that might be shared with families, and it's shared in a variety of ways. It can be, you know, sometimes by mail, sometimes by meeting. But we do ask, and there is a requirement, to my knowledge, for every school to have what in my day we call sort of the back to school meeting, and that is sometime in the beginning of the school year where the school staff, administrator and staff really share the policy as well as the goals and other important information for the year, and helping parents to know what the resources are and actually sometimes even going through, because that's usually included in the family student handbook that goes out at the beginning of every year. So there are ways that the system has been trying to monitor that those meetings take place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say that that some probably don't, but I do know that that is something that is an expectation and is monitored. The policy itself is actually being reviewed and revised and has been coming to the board, I believe, as a first reader. So I hope that you have seen some of the work that is being done for revision, because a part of that is around the communication
mm-hmm.
piece. And if you haven't, if you either check on the website or check into the board office, We can make certain that you get that, because there is still time. If you feel that it's not strong enough, to give some suggestions and recommendations that could be considered around how we can be certain that this information gets out better to folks.
And Ms. Linda and Jeanette, you know, speaking of families, one of the things that came to my mind as Mr. Leo was posing the question was the fact that, you know, we often, and I see this, and I might be way off, but I feel like at sometimes we are upset with the school system. We are upset with the decisions that are made. But then at the same time, we don't really, you know, look at the role that the family has played, that parents have played. You know, when I think about when I've heard hear stories of children or students that are out of school for a long period of time, or they're not doing as well, or they you know what I mean, their GPA is really low. And I'm asking myself, I'm not asking the school board, well, why didn't you do something? I'm looking at the parents first. And I'm wondering, you know, and I mean, you may be able to speak on this or not, but I mean, it's, you know, what is the landscape? What, I mean, tell us, are parents really engaged? And I mean, you can keep it 100% with me, Ms. Linda and Johnny. I want y'all to, are parents as engaged as they, as some folks may want us to believe when it comes to the education of our children in Baltimore City? Do you see that level of engagement?
I don't mind jumping in here, Faraji. I want to say yes to that, right? We see it when parents do come to our board meetings and they speak on the record in public about things and advocating for their young people. We do have what's called a family university, and that's a program. It's like an orientation program, and there's been a ton of families that have been participating in those programs. It's a series of events and activities where we do want to take the time and let parents know how they can support their young person, because the curriculum has changed since we've all been in school, right? And so it's like, well, how, you know, how do I do this new math, or how do I support my young person at home? And so we do see participation in that way. Do we want it to be better? Absolutely. Absolutely. We want it to be better. We want more parents coming in, and we want to be able to provide our services to more families. Mm-hmm. But there are a ton of families in this city, Faraji, that love their kids. They show up for their young people.
Okay.
And I'm just happy to see them participate in our system and in our process.
I'm glad to hear that, because when I heard about the unfortunate situation at Augustus Fell Savage, mm-hmm. and that young man, you know, missing over, I think he over 200 days. And I'm thinking to myself,
for sure,
you know, you know, where was mom? Where was dad? Where was auntie? Where was grandma? I'm trying to figure it out here.
Yeah.
Ms. Linda, I know you as an educator, 38 years you've been in the system. You know, when you hear a story like that, I mean, is that story? And I heard about these ghost students. Can you give us some understanding about how does this dynamic even exist, if there are all these measures and accountabilities and opportunities for families to get involved? How does this happen?
The issue with what is being called the ghost student is really one that is a part of the process that is a regular process that all systems do at the beginning of the school year. And this is, I think this is one of the pieces, even in the budget process, that many folks don't understand, especially I think the community doesn't understand. Our budget for that we have presented this past Tuesday is based on the student count from the previous school year. And that is done, and it's officially sent in to the state at sometime at the end of September and into October, and then, you know, there's reconciliation done. In some cases, students have actually transferred, and it takes us time to find out where they may have transferred to.
Mm-hmm.
In other times, students have actually withdrawn, and we have to, you know, do the follow-up to see where they are. They may be in another system in the state, but you know, folks didn't let our school system know, and so we go through trying to find them, locate those students to the best of our ability. Some students are in other kinds of situations where they have been placed somewhere outside of their own family unit.
Yeah, I saw one student, I read, he was in jail.
But we do offer services to those students, so in some ways they do count.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. And so that's a part of the confusion that I think that folks have, and all of that is you know, accounted for in doing that. When we go through those numbers with the state to come up with the official number, there generally are, you know, we have been on task and, you know, and correct in the final number. But like I said, we do have to take the time to in those particular cases and finding students. So that's what I think people are saying. We have not been receiving funds for non-existent students.
This is a situation, it sounds like, Ms. Linda, this is a situation where students were there, students were present, but then over a course of the year, some circumstances change. Students leave out, move, they get into other circumstances and all of this stuff. But it's like the system is still trying to catch up to the different reality of the student. So you won't see the roles of you know, change until probably the following school year.
That may be the case, right. And a lot happens over summer.
Right.
So that when you come, you know, you plan your year in June for September and thinking you're going to have X number of students there. And then we take that month to see who really is showing up to be there and then have to do the reconciliation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Look, Ms. Linda, Johnette, I appreciate both of your time tonight because just giving us a little bit of insight. I know we couldn't get to all of our wonderful callers tonight. But what would you like? I mean, you just had a meeting on Tuesday, a big meeting. What would you like for our listeners to do? How can they stay informed, stay involved, stay engaged with Baltimore City Public School System and the board's decisions?
The first thing I'm going to say is please put May the 4th on your calendar at 6 p.m. because that is the budget forum, and the forum is one of those times where the public can come and interact with the board. We're going to be talking about that proposed budget, and we do need to hear from the public in terms of things that you agree with, things that you think should be different priorities. If you don't come and let us know or don't send it in writing, then we don't have that information, and that's important for the board members to make a final decision.
Absolutely. Ms. Linda Chenier and Ms. Johnette Richardson, thank you so much for your service, and we thank you for being with us this evening to talk to us about the roles, responsibilities, and how decisions are made for the Baltimore City Public School System. We may have to tap you both to come back on because I feel like there's still another set of issues that we haven't really gotten to, but we thank you for at least starting the conversation with us tonight.
Thank you, Faraji. We're happy to join you again.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Folks, we got to take a quick pause. When we come back, let's have a conversation of a different kind. We're going to talk about the story of one of the first ladies of the Black Mafia family, Ms. Tanisa Welch. We'll have that conversation up next here on For the Culture.